B-Pod Studios.
Straightforward.
You lose too, big boy.
No holds barred.
I'm starting to think this guy's a con man.
Sports talk.
I got it. All right, I got it.
Felger and Maz, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the program. Felger and Maserati here on a Tuesday. Anthony and Big Jim Murray alongside in our Town Fair Tire Studios in beautiful Dorchester at the Beasley Media Group. Hi, Tony.
Marginal, you?
Yeah, I'd say that's good. That's fine. That's better than most days, I would say. Marginal, pretty good. Okay, enough of the pleasantries. I think I'd like to start with some Bruins today, if that's okay with you.
By all means.
We'll start Bruins. We had Don Sweeney speaking yesterday. We had Neely and the Jacob speaking today. So, Bruins people, you have any leftover sort of things that you want to get to? Any sort of leftover things from the season or thoughts heading into the offseason? By all means, now's your time to do it. Can't guarantee we're going to do it all day, but it's where we're going to start, with the Bruins. If I asked you, Anthony, biggest need on the team heading into the offseason, what is it?
A big top six forward. To me, it's plain and simple. You need someone to play with, and I say Bergeron and Marchand because I think you should move Pastrnak to the other line. But, you know, Krejci's line. But to me, it's a big forward that can help that group deal with big defensemen like the Blues had. And so, again, it's not, you know, to me, that was the glaring problem in the series with St. Louis in the finals, was the Bruins couldn't handle their D. Their top six forwards couldn't handle the strength and size of that Blues defense corps. And look, the Blues defense corps is rare. I mean, there aren't many defense corps that are built like that. But if you want to win a championship, you're probably going to have to get through that at some point.
I think you're right. Eventually, you're going to run into someone like that.
I don't think there's a way around it. So, you know, if you want to win a cup, you got to be able to beat a team that has that. Because sooner or later, you're going to run into someone like it, whether it's Tampa, whether it's the Blues, whether it's both, like whatever. Somebody's going to have some big ass D who just clog up the front of the net.
So
that came out wrong.
Yeah,
but
no,
you know
I got it.
Right.
I got 100%. So but my answer is the same. It's just a little more broad. And that is biggest need on the team. Five on five play. Because, it's the same answer as yours, essentially, Maz, because you wouldn't say that they have a personnel problem up front on the power play.
No.
Right? It's not like they need more skill. We would take it, but they don't need more skill necessarily on that first line, certainly, and maybe even in general. I mean, the Bruins might be just about there skill-wise. I usually bemoan they're a little behind in skill. I don't know. This team's pretty close to it.
Yeah, I mean, look, when they had space to operate, they were good. And that's what the power play is, right? Ultimately, that's what you're talking about.
Okay, so to me, it's five-on-five play. Five-on-five play. And I think that relates to that first line and how they get shut down. And they have, like most lines do, when you run into a defensive team with a good core committed to stopping them. And so, you know, how do you remedy that? How do you remedy that to get some size up front, to carve out some room for Bergeron and Marchand? Do you move the lines, et cetera, et cetera? But to me, improving their five-on-five play is the number one thing, even though I know they finished up pretty good in that, you know, goal differential five-on-five. I think they were fourth in the league. But it certainly came back to bite them at the end of the playoffs. I don't think there's any question about it, and there's no question that they have been relying on that first line, and that first line was shut down at times in the playoffs. So I think we're saying the same things. I wonder if the team, though, is whistling past the graveyard about it, if they're serious about that issue or understand that issue, like maybe some fans do. Let's get through some Sweeney sound from yesterday. And this is, again, one of these ones where I say, does he really recognize the issue, if you believe there even is one? Sweeney was asked about the top six fighting through the big defensive core in St. Louis and really going back to last year as well against Tampa Bay. Strahlman, Hedman, McDonough, those guys shut you down just like this St. Louis group shut down the Bergeron line. And so the question is, there are concerns about that first line fighting through big defensive cores?
It's really a blend of your hockey club. You know, we played sort of four different teams throughout the playoffs. and we matched up pretty well in all of them. You know, when you come down to the margins that you have and losing a game seven, I don't know whether or not you necessarily say, now, did we score enough 5-on-5? No, but everybody would say that throughout our lineup if we had just chipped in. But that's, you know, to St. Louis's credit in that regard. It wasn't just the defensemen that were doing that. They make it hard on you, same way Tampa did. We had more depth this year to be able to withstand some of those things and take matchups in other places in the lineup that I think helped our hockey club, and it showed. That's why we went further. That's why we gave ourselves a chance to win right till the end. If you're telling me that there's a perfect player to solve some of those, you know, what every team would be looking for, yeah, I think everybody would ask, you know, yeah, I'll put that guy right in there. But you know, sometimes you just got to allow other players to continue to get better in their own right. You know, we have players that will hopefully continue to do that.
Kind of a word salad there, but to me it was, to me that answer said, well, first of all, he said something about the margins of game seven.
Mm-hmm.
So sort of acting like, we have a championship caliber roster. We just lost on the margins in game seven.
Correct.
Which might be right. I don't want to totally take that away from him. But that's the first thing that he said, losing on the margins in game seven. So we're already there. We don't really need to make any moves. We just need to close that little margin in game seven. And then there's the whole piece to, well, most teams get shut down and they'd take that guy 5-on-5. We're like everybody else, could use that one extra piece. And then there's the, you know, and then maybe comes a different answer, but he sort of hit on it there too about the internal answers to it and all of this. And it's, I think he did everything other than say, yeah, we could use a little size up there. He did everything but acknowledge the problem if you think there's a problem. Maybe he doesn't think there's a problem.
So look, they clearly believe in the versatility and the adaptability of the team. They clearly believe in that.
Oh, and you know, his answer was, well, we got depth scoring this year, so we were able to withstand that. But that doesn't answer the question about your most important line, who you give the most ice time to, getting shut down. And I'm sorry to cut you off. That's what makes that relevant, is that you give that first line so much freaking ice time, they have to produce. They have to.
Yeah, they have trouble with physicality. I think that deep down he would admit that. I'll tell you what else I hope that they don't, you know, you say whistle past the graveyard. I hope they don't look at this and say, yeah, you know, as it turned out, every guy in that line was hurt. You know, Marsham is banged.
So I didn't hear him say that.
No. But my point is, if they look at that and say, well, we caught a couple of bad breaks there, what I would tell them is they're going to be hurt next year, too.
You bet. Yeah, you also caught breaks in that the East basically unfolded the best way possible for you to make that kind of run. So don't fool yourself.
Exactly right, Murray. And then the other thing on top of it is I would look at it and say, all right, you know, you got to let your players develop from within and get better from the inside. He's talking about Pasternak and the young guys. What about the older guys getting worse? Do you factor that in?
Yeah,
absolutely.
So
because,
again,
Bergeron might get worse now. Marchand probably not. It's a little early for him, but he's been at such a high level for 4 years during the regular season. The bottom line is this. I don't think they're big enough. And so I hope that they look at that and say, this is something we have to address. And if we can get a big forward, we need to do it.
Murray?
So I'm with you in that I want to see the 5-on-5 improve, and you too, Maz. Like, I would like to see someone bigger, especially on that second line. Are you okay with maybe seeing the power play numbers dip?
Yes.
In an effort to make that happen?
Yes.
Then they
got to
trade Krug, or at least explore that option.
Okay, so let's get to Krug. Because that's not an immediate roster item, but it is really, when you look about and look at their budget going forward, that's a big decision they have with Torrey Krug. That's a real decision. That's a big decision that they have with Torrey Krug. And so my whole thing is, yes, get better 5-on-5. And if that means your power play dips, I'm okay with that. I'd frankly rather be closer to St. Louis than you, which is better 5-on-5 and not as much of a special teams team, which is what you were in 2011 for sure. And there's a lot of ways to skin a cat. I mean, there's no absolutes, but to me, I think that what happened at the end of that final is what happens generally. The whistles get swallowed. And you won't be afforded the chance to win on special teams. So you have to win 5-on-5. And I think they need to improve 5-on-5. And on Krug, he's under contract for $5.25 million next year, which is good value for a guy who scores half a point a game. Real good value. You have three options with him. That is, trade him now so you get something in return. And you don't lose him for nothing after next year. Take advantage of this 1 year at 5.25 and then let him walk for nothing in return. There's a case to be made for that.
Sure there is.
I mean, he's a really good dollar value this year. You make one more run at it with him, and then you lose him for nothing, and so you lose him for nothing. But you get him for that 1 year and that one extra cup run at a really good value. You could do that. Or sign him to an extension now, and hopefully that by getting to him early, there's a little bit of a hometown discount there, that he gives you a hometown discount. To me, the only thing that I did not mention that I think would be a bad option is signing him next year when his contract's up, because then you're paying through the nose.
Yeah,
he's gonna be in the $8 million a year range.
I think he's their best trade chip to me after the season that he had. And if people are any, there's any teams trying to improve their power play, like that's a guy that you look at and you could probably get a good return on him. I like him. I like him on the power play. I like his offensive capabilities. I don't really like him as a, you know, true defenseman, but I also think he's just good in that locker room too. But I don't know. I think that you've got to at least make those calls and shop around a little bit if you do want to get bigger.
It's a close call. It's a tough call. And there's a lot of cases on both sides to it. I would lean on the trade now. I really would. Because, and I've heard people say this, I think I heard Beatles say it, you know, that you win on the power play now. You need the power play, so you need this guy. Well, my whole point is, the reason you need the power play and you win on the power play is because you're less of a team 5-on-5. And Torrey Krug has been one of the reasons you're less of a team 5-on-5.
No question.
He's a special teams player. He's a power play player. You don't even use him on the PK. So, if by trading him you get worse on the power play but better 5-on-5, do you net out to be a better team? I think that's something they have to look at. But look, if they want to keep him for 1 year at 5-2-5 and just take advantage of him and that salary, I think that's I'm not opposed to that, too. I'm not opposed to him playing out 1 year and then walking for nothing in return.
No, and you shouldn't be, because, again, if they believe they can win a cup, then that year is worth it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that year, again, now, if it were me, I would trade him. Because for lots of reasons, and I won't get into all of them, but you got young guys. You got Grizzlick. You got two more left shots coming through the system, allegedly. And I'm not saying they're the same guy between Lozon and Vakanainen. So you should be able to absorb that. This is why you drafted those guys.
So are these two things tied together? Your need to get better 5-on-5 or more size up front, a little more physicality in that top six so you don't just get shut down by those big decors. And the Krug situation, does one help the other? I think there's a real case to be made for it. I mean, there's so many good things about Krug. He's improved defensively, and they helped him along. And a big game changer this year was pairing him with Carlo. Their defensive numbers are pretty good, and Krug's defensive numbers really improved. And I give most of that credit to Carlo, but either way, that pairing was arguably their best pairing in the playoffs. I don't think arguably. I think it was. I think Krug-Carlo was their best 5-on-5 pairing. And there's something about Krug-Carlo that worked and, you know, gave you the defensive stuff that you needed, and Krug's offense is self-evident. And so they sort of figure that out with Krug. Also, this leadership piece is real. They love him for it. He's going to have an A on his sweater soon. If he stays, he's that kind of guy. He's that important to the whole fabric of the thing. He's dying to freaking stay here. Did you read his quotes? This is a guy, somewhere Torrey Krug's agent is saying, Torrey, would you cool down a little bit? Here's Krug. And do you want to stay in Boston? That's been my goal from day one, is to become part of this locker room and this core. Guys have come and gone, and I've been lucky enough to stay for a while, and I want to be here forever. It's a great group of guys. You feel really privileged to be a part of this group, and you want to bring something to the table yourself, and hopefully I've done that. I'd personally love to get something done quickly. This is an important place in my heart, a place I've wanted to play my whole career. So, I mean, again, like, that's not exactly playing a poker hand there, dude. You know, I go to market, see what happens. You know, I have to do what's best for me and my family. No, he's like, no, I want to be here. I want something done quickly. So he wants to be here. So will he give you a little bit of a discount if you go to him early?
Oh, I bet he would. And they would require it anyway, because they're not going to be able to keep everybody otherwise.
The only thing they can't do is pay through the nose $8 million a year next year when you're bidding against the rest of the league.
There's no shot they'll do that, I don't think.
That's stupid.
Yeah, they won't do that.
So you either pay him now and hopefully get him on a discount, trade him, fill out your top six, or just ride off and hope you go on one more run next year. And then let them walk off there. So, going to start off with some Bruins thoughts. Those are our two to begin the show. What are yours? Right to you after this.
B.O.B. Boob.
Oh, my God. Isn't that Bob?
It's Felger and Mass. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Hot in front.
Oh, what a battle in front of the net going on right now.
Here's Heinen over the line, high slot.
Torrey Krug. Perron still going at it.
Left of the net. Back of the cage. Krejci turns. Looks, centers, McAvoy shoots off of Chari's leg and wide. Krug came in and just hammered one of the Blues. I think that was Robert Thomas. Oh, Krug just ran him over, and Krug with a
Well, Torrey's an important part of our hockey club. Really was proud of his effort. Took to heart being in a top four role this year in the playoffs in particular, where he was going to face matchups on the road and handled them really well. The power play, the points, those things speak for themselves and have been for, you know, throughout his time here. He's a big part of our club. Have opportunity, you know, starting July 1st to open up talks. Again, the RFA market and some of our internal things will dictate the timing of those conversations. If somebody blew us away, you know, every player has to be looked at in that way. When you're an organization, you just have to. You're doing a disservice if you don't. But it would take a pretty unique opportunity for us to part with Torrey. We think he's a big part of the fabric of our group. You know, he's kind of that next wave of leadership that we talk about in behind some of the guys that have carried that mantle for a long period of time. But he's an important part of our club.
Okay, Don Sweeney yesterday on Torrey Krug. Some Bruins thoughts here a week after the fact. Ricky in Winchester, lead us off today. Go ahead, Ricky.
That trade, this guy, literally in the future, we cannot afford him. He's going to be, like you said, an $8 million player. And I think McAvoy and Grizzly can pick up the slack offensively. And there was rumors that the Red Wings were interested in Mantha, in Krug. So I would say trade for Anthony Mantha. He's young, only worth $3 million, and he's big, so he can go with the Tracy Bergeron line. That's all I got.
Okay. I mean, and you heard, I was just listening to some Neely sound from today as well, talking about the left shots coming up through their system. This Vakanainen left shot, right?
And Lauzon also.
Lauzon left shot. You already have Grizzly there, left shot. You're going to pay McAvoy. Are you going to pay Krug more than McAvoy?
No.
No.
I mean, Krug's going to be unrestricted. McAvoy's restricted. There's a difference there. But the way these restricted guys get paid now, it's like it doesn't matter. It's oddly, the stupid system there in the NHL. Are you going to pay Krug more than McAvoy? What if Krug asked for more than McAvoy? What do you do?
You got to move him. I mean, like, again, and you haven't even mentioned Carlo yet. He factors into this, too.
So Carlo's going to be in the $4 million range. He just doesn't score enough to be a huge money guy at this point.
Right. So the money's not as high as those guys, but it's still an investment.
Yes, sir.
Right? You got to commit to that guy, too. So like, I just don't see where they can do it all. That's all. It's a hard cap league. It's a real cap league. And so in fact, it's really the only one. Like, the dollars actually count. Every nickel counts. So unless you do something else to soften your roster, like Tuca, then you can do it.
Or Krejci.
Right. I mean, you're going to have to clear it somewhere else to be able to keep. I love the idea of keeping all the D. I just don't see where they can do it.
The center question to me is an interesting one, too. Cam and Taunton, go ahead.
I have 2 points, you guys, one short-term, one long-term. First one, I want to see Krejci moved and that money used to keep Johansson. And long-term, you got to get some centers in your system. Starting this weekend at the draft, I mean, you have plenty of defensemen, plenty of wingers in your system. You've got to get some centers in your system because Krejci and Bergeron aren't getting any younger.
Okay, so I think that's a concern two, three years down the line, but it's a real concern. Who's your next Patrice Bergeron? Who's your next Krejci? In the short term, they should be okay, even if they trade Krejci, because, I don't know, I sort of like Charlie Coyle. I think if he's your third-line center, you're in good shape, which they were. And even if he's your second-line center, I don't think that's too shabby. I think you're okay there. I think you're okay. And you may suffer a little bit in the regular season, but I think that at least Coyle projects there with that size to do that thing that we're talking about, face down and, you know, square up against some bigger decors. The question is, do you use him as that first-line right wing, or you put him on the right side on one of those top two lines and let him be that size equation that you're talking about in the top six?
I would consider it.
See, I wouldn't, because I think he's a better center. I don't know. I like him in the middle. Even though he's not a great face-off guy, I still like him in the middle there. And I don't know why. Don Sweeney also spoke about that yesterday, Charlie Coyle moving up or playing center. Here's what he said.
Putting Charlie in a consistent spot is, I think, when he plays his best hockey. He referenced that when he was in Minnesota, a production role. He could slide up and play right wing if another player emerged, from within. And I can go through the guys. I mean, Trent Frederick would be an obvious one that if he asserts himself or if Sean plays up, you know, maybe you move Charlie to the right. But for right now, I think the balance of our group and what Coyle presents as mismatches at times in other teams gives us balance. And it's just hard to play against that way, especially when you're coming with Sean with the speed and the physicality that their line brings and their ability to check and contribute offensively. It presents problems. And I think that was the strength of our hockey club this year from a depth standpoint.
I agree with him.
Yeah, there's no question.
Third and fourth lines are your best lines, and part of it is the matchups they get. So part of it also is Coyle going against third D pairs and whatnot. You move him up to the top six, all of a sudden he's going against Parayko, and maybe that all that changes. But there's an option there. There's an option there. I sort of like Coyle at center, though, as I think they do, just reading in the tea leaves.
Right, I mean, there. To me, you know, some of it's going to be dictated by what's available to you. So if there's a third-line center that's available to you, then I think you put Coyle at right wing. Ideally, you're right. You keep him in the third, you know, you keep him as your third-line center. But to me, the size problem on that first line's got to get fixed.
Coyle, third-line center. Corrali, fourth-line center. I mean, that's pretty good.
That is pretty good.
Brendan in the car. Go ahead, Brendan.
Hey, I'm calling about Torey Krug, who you guys are talking about trades with him. I think he should go. He's a plus 27 for his entire career so far with the Bruins. If you look at his counterpart, Lysowski, that was coming up with him through the beginning, where is Lysowski now? What is he doing? He's playing AHL hockey because of his size. Krug's the same way, too small. He's great. He scores on the power play, but his plus-minus speaks for itself. A plus 27 for his career. He's a defenseman. Supposed to stop the puck from going in the net, not like, get the puck in the net all the time.
Okay, I'm with you. You understand, Brendan, that it improved this year when he got with Carlo. It improved this year, and I'm just reading. I can't remember where I cut and paste this from. So Boston Sports Journal, maybe? The Athletic? The Globe? I'm sorry, I can't remember. But anyway, the pair was, again, Krug-Carlo. Was arguably Boston's most consistent duo on the blue line during the playoffs. Boston held a 12-9 edge in 5-on-5 goals in the 303 minutes of time on ice that both skaters were deployed during the postseason. So in 300 minutes, time on ice, 5-on-5, they only allowed 9 goals and scored 12. They were a plus, those two. During the cup final against St. Louis, did it get any better or worse? No, it was the same. The Krug-Carlo duo were out on the ice for 84 minutes, 5-on-5 time on ice, primarily against both Braden Schenn and Ryan O'Reilly's lines. Despite that arduous matchup, Boston still managed to hold an edge in both goals, 4-3, and shots on goal, 48-35, when Cassidy rolled with Krug-Carlo. So when Krug's with Carlo defensively, it works a lot better.
Oh, there's no... Again, you said earlier they were the best defensive pair during the postseason, and I agree with that. I mean, McAvoy was inconsistent. Chara has his issues now. And, you know, so that second pairing was reliable. They were good. And the other thing is they stayed healthy. The two of them, right? Carlo's never been able to stay healthy in the postseason. It's the first time he's ever played in the postseason. Krug, it feels like, always has something. He's getting hammered into the board somewhere. So when they're together and they're healthy, this is really the first extended look that you got.
Dan in New Hampshire, go quickly.
Yes, Mike. Tony, you started this whole thing off of a top six forward. I believe they have that in Kuhlman. You know, this kid has 4 years at Duluth, one of the best programs in the country. Last year, he was MVP of the Frozen Four.
Not big enough.
He's not bad. He's got size. He's got great speed. He's got a great shot.
Okay, size and, I mean, speed and shot. You know, we've seen some of that. Maz is talking size. What's his size, Maz?
So he is 5'11", 185.
Not quite a much.
No, it's not. They need like a 6'2", 210 pounder. That's what they need. Someone like that. I'll even take 6 foot, 210. Just someone with some mass. Like, I would tell you that DeBrusque is big enough. But DeBrusque has got to fight through it a little bit more, and I guess he had some physical issues at the end of the year, too. But whatever.
So they've got a bunch of guys that if one of them pops, you're in a whole different thing. But I don't know how many of them fill the size issue, unless this Trent Frederick is one of them. But Trent Frederick, Zach Senyshyn is eventually going to get a shot. He is. He's eventually going to get a shot. Kuhlman, Bjork kid.
Anders Bjork, yeah.
Who has a little bit of size himself.
Stanika?
Stanika is sort of there. So those are just the forwards. I'm not even talking about the D at this point. So you got, you know, five guys in there that if one of them makes a move, that sort of changes the dynamic. I'd like to see them not sort of rely on that, though. You know, have one of those guys break in on the bottom six and work their way from there and not go in. You know, I think they started last year with Bjork on the first line, didn't they?
It sounds right.
I think that's what they were doing.
I mean, ideally, the way you're talking about is a better way to do it.
Bjork is 6 feet, 182. Is that fine? I mean, I guess that's fine, but not exactly what you're looking for.
No, I mean, I'd like him to weigh about another 25 pounds. You got to give me 210.
Okay, we're starting off with some Bruins. Going to give you a Red Sox minute as well, right after Murray's update, which is right here.
Sports Hub headlines.
The Boston Celtics' Al Horford will decline to exercise his $30 million option for next season, and he will become an unrestricted free agent on June 30th. ESPN's NBA insider Adrian Wojnarowski first to report this news. He's also reporting that there is motivation for both Horford and the Celtics to work towards an agreement on a new long-term deal. Sacramento Kings forward Harrison Barnes declining his $25 million player option. He's going to become an unrestricted free agent. And ahead of Thursday night's draft, ESPN is also reporting the New York Knicks have declined a recent trade offer that would have sent the number 3 overall draft pick to the Atlanta Hawks in exchange for the 8th and 10th picks overall. Rick Porcello pitched 7 shutout innings. Red Sox stretched their winning streak to a season-high 6 straight games with their 2-0 win over the Twins last night. Tonight, the series continues in Minnesota with David Price on the mound. Twins counter with Michael Pineda. First pitch, 8-10. And in a statement from his wife, Tiffany Ortiz, Red Sox legend David Ortiz has officially had his status upgraded to good and continues to make progress at Mass General Hospital. Headlines are brought to you by Feldman Surveyors, with offices in Boston and Worcester for all your survey services. You can count on Feldman to get it right from the ground up. Go to FeldmanSurveyors.com. I'm Jim Murray for Boston's Home for Sports, 98.5 of Sports Hub. Your next update in 30 minutes, and get Sports Hub headlines anytime in your flash briefing on your Alexa voice-activated speaker.
At the end of your ride home, you'll be all caught up.
If you get suspended again, you're going to miss playoff time, or you're going to miss time in the playoffs.
Or questioning your judgment.
I'm sorry I brought it up.
Felger and Mendes, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Frazier's 2-2.
Struck him out. Red Sox win it. 2-0. You talk about brilliant pitching, and the Red Sox make a statement here in game number 1.
Here's your Red Sox minute. Statement, Maz? Statement?
No, I'm not going statement. I'm not giving you that one yet. But I'll say this. It was a good win. I mean, I'm happy to see it. The way the whole year has gone. So look, I know we've had this discussion in that, you know, strength of schedule can be deceiving in Major League Baseball, and it can. What if I told you the Red Sox played 9 series this year against winning teams? How many do you think they've won?
Oh, God, you're going to say 0 or 1?
One of them. One. They've won 1 series against a team with a winning record. They're 1-7-1. And honestly, the tie is Texas. So, like, I throw that one out. It's really 1-7, if you ask me.
Fake split.
It is a fake split. Totally. So, look, they beat Tampa early in the year. They went down there and they won 3. And more often than not, they're losing the opener of these series every time. Whether it's they go into Houston and they lose the first 2. They go into New York, they lose the first 2. Over and over and over again. It's the same pattern. So what bothers me is the pattern. That they play good teams and they're losing with consistency. Whether it's early in the year or late in the year. They're just losing. So last night, they win a game 2-0. The Twins helped them out in the 8th inning, but nonetheless, the Red Sox played a pretty clean game. Clean game. Good. Now take the series. And then I think, like, you know, they could go a long way towards erasing much of their first half if they can get on some kind of roll going into the All-Star break here. Get on a roll, get within 3 or 4 games, then come out and get on the 10th tee for the second half, and here you go. Like, that. So last night, I'll give it to him. That's a good win. I'm not going to bitch about last night.
Don't sneeze at that, folks. It's very rare that Maz will give you one.
You damn straight.
He just gave you one.
You're lucky I gave you one.
Those are like horseshoes. It takes a crowbar to get one of those from Maz. He actually gave you one.
And 2 hours and 43 minutes last
night. I was just going to say, that last night was actually watchable.
No, it was. You know why? Because it was a real baseball game.
Yeah.
That's why. The pitchers worked fast. They got people out. The game moved. The whole thing. It was a real baseball game. It wasn't a softball game where guys are taking walks and trying to jack at 500 feet.
I'm sitting there. I'm like, well, if it was always like this, I wouldn't bitch about it so much.
I think that guy Barrios for the Twins last night at one point retired 19 in a row.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's 6 1/3 innings without allowing a runner.
Porcello, 7 shutout. Brewer, Brazier.
So the bullpen.
How's your bullpen?
So last night, as soon as I saw it, I went, here we go. I thought this was a meltdown waiting to happen. You know, you look at that and you say, Cora, for whatever reason, decided he wasn't going to go. He wasn't going to pitch Workman before the game, he decided. And Barnes did not pitch Sunday in Baltimore. They decided to bypass him. So I thought that was a meltdown waiting to happen. And the Twins helped him out and they got through it. And Brazier actually had a good 9th. So, again, to me, that was a good night. There haven't been enough of them. And there's still, you know, they still need to have more. But it was a good night under the circumstances.
Okay, to your phones. As promised, back to everything Rich in Bristol on the Sox. Go ahead, Rich.
Hey, guys. Yeah, the bullpen is the big weakness here. They need a back-end reliever, and I think Eovaldi getting in there once he gets back. Now, We know he's not stretched out. He's coming off surgery. He did well in the playoffs last year. You're going to have to ease him into this at some point. But rather than try to trade for somebody, let's get Eovaldi back into the pen.
Agreed.
I know.
Agreed, Rich. That's how I would use him. Honestly, he's overpaid for it, but you didn't pay him for that. You paid him to be a starter, but oh well. That you've now you're in a different situation. He's coming back from his thing, and I use him as that just because I watch the Josh Hader thing, which he's not purely a closer, although he definitely can close. If you got to come in and do two plus innings, three innings in the middle of a game, he does that. If you want him to close, he can close. He's that guy. Yep, that's exactly how I use him.
So the only thing I worry there about now is the elbow. Right, he's had two surgeries, he just had a third, and now he's had a setback.
Would you worry about it any more or less if you were a starter?
The theory is, again, I'm just giving you the long-standing theory, that you can control the routine of a starter better than you can a reliever.
Yep.
So that he pitches every fifth day, and then you give him 4 days to rebuild and rest. Right, that's the theory. Now, does it always work that way? I know plenty of starters who couldn't do it. So, I don't know. And I think they're going to give him a crack at relieving first, but they need bullpen help. There's no two ways about it.
Nick in Connecticut on Torrey Krug. Go ahead, Nick.
Hey, guys. So, I like the idea of trading Torrey Krug, but what would you guys expect in a return, like a realistic return, like a first-round pick or, that big forward you guys want?
I want a top six forward with size. That's it.
No picks?
Not necessarily. That wouldn't be my priority. No. If I'm trading Krug for picks, I think I'm just riding it out with him and playing the year out.
You're better off actually keeping him. And if he walks the following year. No, you'd want a guy. Someone mentioned this Anthony Mantha, who plays for the Red Wings.
Detroit.
Yeah. Like, he's a moose. 6'5", shoots left.
Oh, I didn't realize he was that big.
Yeah.
But he's huge.
6'5", 225. Last year, 25 goals, 23 assists.
Okay, and let me just amend this. If, I don't know, the Phoenix Coyotes want to trade you their first-round pick for Torrey Krug, I might look at that. If you're talking about like a lottery
high
team,
pick.
If you're talking about an assy team, who wants to say, here's our first round pick and you are looking at the lottery, then yes, I trade Torrey Krug for first. But if I'm trading him to a contender or someone in the top half of the league, no. I don't need your 21st overall pick. But I'll take your big forward. And, Detroit might be that. Detroit was a really assy team last year. I don't know. But to me, my priority is beefing up front and beefing up 5-on-5. If I'm going to trade Torrey Krug and I'm losing something power play, I need to get better 5-on-5. And that's what I think they need to be in the playoffs anyway.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, if you could find a team that's got a winger who's got a year left like Krug, you swap yours for ours. There you go. And Mantha's a restricted free agent after next year, so I don't know if that's a perfect fit because you have a little more control there than the Red Wings would over Krug, but something like that is close.
Dan in the car on the Bees. Go ahead, Dan.
Hi, my thought was, are the Bruins going to be in the restricted free agent market, either overshooting somebody or, with McAvoy? Because you talked about need for a winger. Mitch Marner's a restricted free agent. I mean, depending on how many draft picks the Bruins got, he would fit all the boxes.
It's just not going to happen, Dan. It just doesn't happen across the league, and the Bruins are not going to do that. They're not going to do that. They're not going to open up open warfare with a division team and sign a guy to it. I just don't see that happening. No one in the league does it. Hardly. I mean, the number of offer sheets that go out in the last several years have been it's less than five, I think. Even just offer sheets, never mind guys signing. I think the last guy to move was Ryan O'Reilly 10 years ago, whenever that was. It was a long time ago. Maybe not 10 years, but anyway, I don't think that's realistic. Are they going to try and sign their own restricted guys? Yeah, you bet. And watch out for McAvoy. And that ties to the Krug thing. Does McAvoy have delusions of grandeur? Erik Karlsson just signed for $11.5 million a year.
That's absurd.
Eight at 92 for a guy I love, Norris guy, brilliant player, but isn't the strongest defensive defenseman there. And I don't know how totally tough and durable he is. 8 years at 92, 11.5?
Ridiculous contract.
Aye.
Ridiculous.
Now, again, he's unrestricted. Charlie's just 2.5 years in the league. He's not going to command 11, but if that raises, rising tide lifts all boats, what does that do for Charlie McAvoy? So that's kind of scary. If McAvoy gets piggy, if he gets greedy, you're not going to be able to sign Krug, and you're going to have a holdout is what's going to happen. You're not going to trade McAvoy, and that's what happens with these RFA guys. They hold out into the year. Nylander last year in Toronto, Trouba in Winnipeg. They hold out, and then there's like this deadline in November where you have to sign them or they miss the whole year. And that's sort of like, that's the DEFCON situation with Charlie McAvoy, that he wants, I don't know, if he wants eight? No.
I mean, you might have to trade him if that happens.
I don't do that. I let him sit. I let him sit. I don't trade him. They have restricted rights for like another 5 years or something. This is why I don't get the league and that RFA thing. Like, why are you jumping through hoops to sign these guys, these mega deals, after 2-3 years when you have, you know, restricted rights for like 5, 6, 7? You don't have to do it. I know. I just let him sit and hope he doesn't stuff his face with bonbons back on Long Island. No, I mean, that's the Charlie McAvoy. That's the holdout is the issue with Charlie McAvoy.
I mean, Charlie can get chubby. I don't think there's any question about that.
Long commercial-free segment is next.
I just don't know what to say anymore.
Wrong. Sorry. Wrong. Sorry.
It's Felger and Maz.
They could use a good ass kicking.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
I think organizationally, you know, we look at what the best lineup we can put on the ice. And if that means that Bruce wants to slide Pasta down and leave him there, I don't think David's going to see him for 82 nights. That's just my own personal opinion based on, you know, whether that's injuries or whether that's lineup or matchups and such. You know, David also spoke to the fact that now he's had consistency with Jake and they developed a pretty good relationship. You know, a lot of teams are set up in pairs rather than threesomes. In a perfect world, yes, we would identify a guy and plug him in there and they would, you know, David would return to 70 points and the line would be prolific. And we hope we have that internal option. I mean, he spoke to a couple of guys that he had a chance to play with, so that might be the route we go, or we look outside the organization. That's what we're trying to identify to help us and balance us. Then that's what we'll do. I don't think I can sit here today and say I absolutely have the perfect identity player, but doesn't mean we won't find it between now and then. But I think we're good with the options we have. We're bringing back, if we don't make any changes, which is very, very unlikely that we won't, we're bringing back a pretty damn good hockey club. And David's a big part of that.
Pastrnak, to me, was the most frustrating player, David Pastrnak. And again, I just feel like there's reluctance there on the team to change up that first line. Do you think they need to change up the first line, Anthony?
In the playoffs, yes. Regular season, have a blast. They'll blow people out of the water, just like they always do. Because the talent level is so high that, fine, no problem. I mean, and the game's a little different, so the skill level's so high, they'll dominate teams during the regular season. In the playoffs, it won't work. Depending on the opponent, I should say that. For certain matchups, they need to change it. They're just too... I'm just giving you my two cents.
I think he should have been with Krejci last year.
I mean, so you tell me how you feel, but I think that they are susceptible to physical strong play.
I also think that line is developing a little bit of some bad habits. And maybe it's more Marchand. I don't know. It's Marchand and Pastrnak. Pastrnak plays like a bozo half the time. He really does. Stumbling around out there. He's painful for me to watch. Marchand has obviously more grit to his game, but he's gotten really sloppy. Some of those line changes and back-checking plays that he made in the finals were inexcusable.
Dumb.
And he's out there forever, and I think that line has developed that problem too. They hang out there way too long, and they get exposed going backwards. That line got pantsed in the final. I'm sorry. They got dominated. They were all big minus players. David Pastrnak was a minus freaking 7 in the Stanley Cup final.
He cost you a goal a game.
You're minus 1 when you start the game in the Stanley Cup final with David Pastrnak. And I feel like they're all, they being Neely, Sweeney, the whole group there is just a little too cavalier about, well, it's on the margins of game 7 and hopefully we'll get something from. No. What happened to that first line in the final should open your eyes a little bit. And especially the way Marchand and Pastrnak played through that. At the very least, get your ass off the ice. Unless there's 8 seconds left and they're on a rush in your own zone, Marchmont, then stay on the ice. Idiot. I'd be a little more frustrated with that group than I'm sensing from these guys.
So maybe they are internally and they don't want to throw anyone under the bus.
They cost you the cup. They cost you the championship. How come I don't feel that frustration or that edge? They cost you the cup. And it's like, no, I got a good group. We have a good group. We come back. No. They cost you the championship. I mean, I don't know. I feel that frustration. Do you? Do they? Neely today on Bruins needs, Billy. Let's hear that. Neely today.
Well, obviously, I know it's been talked about at length about another top six forward, you know, so we'll see where that ends up. We're obviously going to need to have some strong centermen coming through the system, as we talked about with where Krejci and Bergeron are. So our back end, I'm pretty comfortable with, obviously, with Carlo, McAvoy, Grizzlick played really well for us this year. Torrey had a strong year. You know, obviously Zdeno's another year older, but we've got a couple young, good left-handed prospects coming. So it's just, I think our bottom six is pretty strong this year. So, you know, if we can strengthen in the immediate future our top six, you know, that's something we'd like to try and do, but we've talked about that for a couple of years now.
Okay. Adding in the top six. To me, the Krug thing is a fascinating thing. There's a real issue there contract-wise that they got to figure out and they have to navigate. Can you use it to solve the problem up front? Do they even think they have a problem? I'm not sure. After their first line got absolutely exposed in that Stanley Cup final. I don't know if they think they have a problem. Maybe they don't. Maybe it's just me. Maybe it's recency bias. I'm just frustrated by what happened in those final 2 weeks when you had a chance to win a cup and your first line puked on itself. He says, I'm pretty confident in back, he says, Neely. I'm comfortable on the back end. McAvoy, Chara, Carlo, Krug.
I feel pretty good about that, too.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. And again, I'm not
Chara?
No. But I'm talking long term more than short term.
Grezlick Miller?
Yeah, I'm okay. I'm okay with what they got there, and I like the fact that they have a couple of kids coming. You know, again, Vakanainen was a first round pick. Lozon, I think, was a second, right? So, and they both, you know, Lozon had a good junior tournament a couple of years ago. So I just feel like between now, that's assuming they keep McAvoy and Carlo. If they keep those guys, I think they're gonna be okay back there. Like, those guys are cornerstone defensemen. I think that's what they are. So I feel like, all in all, the defense core, they're in pretty good shape there.
Okay. I still feel they're, you know, a big gap between them and a team like St. Louis. It's different. But their D core was good enough to win. Their first line wasn't. Their first line wasn't. And they're just going to keep the status quo? I mean, maybe. Okay. Maybe they just had a bad week. Greg and Canton. Go ahead, Greg.
Michael, I agree that the first line really blew it, but for most teams, like if you look at St. Louis, their first line, when they weren't good, their second line was really good. And for the Bruins, their second line was atrocious. And I'm just sick and tired of every year, we got to find a guy to play with David Krejci. We got to find a guy. How about you find a guy to play with Jake DeBrusk or Carson Kuhlman at this point? Like, when does it get to the point where we can't keep trying to please David Krejci? We need to look at other options. Can we get another center in here that's going to be happy playing wherever he's playing or whoever he's playing with?
Greg, how would you feel? How would you feel if your second line next year was Jake DeBrusk, Charlie Coyle, Marcus Johansson?
I mean, what's wrong with that?
I think that's okay. You want to tell me you're going to trade David Krejci and use the money to sign Marcus Johansson? I don't hate it. I'm a little crap's falling apart in here.
I thought that was a sound effect.
What was that?
Sounded like a pan hitting someone over the head.
Yeah, is there an earthquake or something? What's going on?
No.
Is this the apocalypse? Is this the big one?
Get your go bag, Felger.
Sarah, the eagle flies at dawn. get out bag. I'll meet you in the spot.
For all I know, Murray was sticking a tuna sandwich in the ceiling tiles before the show.
Grab the girls. I'll meet you at the spot.
You pissed off at some onions up there.
So what was I just saying? I'm totally distracted. What was I just saying?
Something about Krug, maybe?
Yeah. I can't remember. I liked it, though. I liked what I was doing there. I just can't remember what it was. It was something. Oh, second line of DeBrusk, Coyle, Johansson. And then you're, I don't know. And now you got to find like a whole new third line. But I don't know. To me, David Krejci is your highest paid player. I'm kind of done with that. It doesn't feel like they are, but I'm sort of done with that, too. If he wasn't your highest paid guy, I'd feel differently about it. But at 7.25, I mean, really? Are you getting value from that?
No, definitely not. No. So look, I just wonder, I don't know. I wonder with Krejci. I wonder where they are. I'm not convinced that they're fine with it. A year ago, they went out and tried to get Tavares. So, I'm not convinced. I think if the right thing came along, they would move on there.
Okay, so we started Bruins. You can weigh in all day if you want. The front office met the media the last couple days, so there's some jumping off points here. And free agency begins in like a week and a half. Week and a half, July 1st in the NHL. So we're looking at same timeline as the NBA. A lot of these decisions that the Celts are facing, the Bruins are facing, or just the timeline of it anyway, is similar. So you want to weigh in on the Bees all day? You can. But speaking of the Celts, there has been some developments today with their roster. We'll give you the latest and our thoughts right after Murray's update here. 90 seconds, no commercials.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.